We're in the middle of a series right now. We're preaching our way through the Nicene Creed, and today there's a portion of the Nicene Creed that talks about we believe in the Holy Spirit. And so to help us think about this, I thought, what better way to talk about the Holy Spirit than start with a story about Disneyland? I got at least one laugh, so we're on to a good start. If you've ever been to Disneyland, you know that they have good signage everywhere, or anywhere like that. They do not want you to go where you're not supposed to go. It's very evident all over the park that if you're not supposed to enter into a doorway or into a walkway, there is sign after sign because they have lawyer after lawyer who's making sure that there's sign after sign after sign. I think they have one lawyer per sign to make sure. So it's very evident. You can't walk into the park and be like, I don't know where to go, or I don't know if I should not go in there. But surprisingly, people still get in trouble at Disneyland. They still go to the wrong places. Even though I was there yesterday, and they're doing all this construction, and there's no way you don't know that you shouldn't go behind a construction wall. And yet, you still have people who get caught. They're doing things that they shouldn't be doing and going into the spaces that we know we were never actually supposed to be going into. They have all the signs there for a reason, for your safety, but also because they know where the adventure is. They know where they want you to see, and they're trying to get you to go see it. So I think about that idea of the Holy Spirit. And a few years ago, we went to Disneyland, and if you've ever gone, they have a parking structure. And then once you go to the parking structure, you have to get on a tram to go to the park. So you have to, I always tell my kids, our first ride is the car ride to Disneyland. The tram ride is technically the second ride. They don't like that. They think I'm kidding. And I am, but that's what a dad does. So we get on the tram. And I saw something a couple years on this trip that I had never in my life seen at Disneyland before. That tramway road is marked off. Like, I don't even know how one would get into it without slipping right by a Disneyland cast member. And they have those pretty well stationed too. But we're on the tram and we're making the turn, kind of going around where you're going to begin seeing downtown Disney and the park, and everything was fine, except that particular morning, someone had decided this tramway road is the best place I could take my morning jog. And so we kind of pull around and we can see, we're kind of toward the back, and we can see that we're slowing down where everyone's looking, wondering what's going on. And sure enough, there's just a jogger who's running. And usually Disney is pretty good about when people are doing things, like if a kid puts their hand outside of the boat on Pirates, or if they're doing something maybe a little bit out of line, they have those intercoms that they can use. And the trams are stationed with these intercoms to give a little added guidance of, in case you didn't see all the 30 signs prior, let me just tell you. So they get on the intercom and they go, "Sir, get out of the way," which is very un-Disney-like in the first place. But nonetheless, I think they were probably trying not to call this person out and totally embarrass them, because maybe they didn't know where they were going. Maybe they were in the wrong spot. Who knows? And do they move? No. He just continues to jog. And I've jogged before, and I know when things are behind me. So he can't not know that something very large is creeping up right behind him. And so they get on the intercom again. "Sir, get out of the way." And he doesn't get out of the way. And this is what shocked me, and I've never seen this. Disney, whoever was running the tram, completely stopped the tram. And of course, everyone's upset because we're just trying to get to the park. But they stop the tram, and the guy who's driving the tram gets out to go talk to the guy, and the guy has headphones in. He's completely not paying attention. Now, there's a couple ways that we could look at this story, and I want to share with you, because often I feel like every day, the Spirit is calling. Every day of our life, the Spirit is attempting to guide us and direct us. But far too often, we're like the jogger, with one of two things happening. Either we have our headphones in and we're completely self-consumed and we're not paying attention to the fact that God is calling me to something bigger and directing me to a place that I could barely even begin to imagine. God literally just called, by the way. Or number two, he heard. He knew the tram was behind him. But how often can we say that we've heard God or we've felt the tugging of the Spirit in our lives and we ignored it? Maybe out of fear or what others might think. Whatever the reason may be, I don't think any of us are alone in this reality. I think in some way, shape, or form, we've all ignored the Spirit. God living and breathing and calling us and wooing us and beckoning us into a deeper relationship with Him and people in this world who so desperately need love. But we ignore. Or we forget. We forget that the Spirit beckons. Often we can get so neat and tidy and into a routine that we forget that God has called us to a wild adventure. One without boundaries often that takes us out on ground that may be completely shaky and unrealistic. And maybe it doesn't even make any sense, and yet He calls us. And help us think about this idea this morning of the Spirit calling us and how we respond to the Spirit. I'd love to turn your attention to Matthew chapter 14. And if you have your Bibles, you can open it up. We're going to start in verse 22 this morning. You can use the Pew Bibles if you want, or I believe it's up on the screen here. And I want to read you a story that perhaps you've heard your entire life. And often we hear it through one perspective, and I want to maybe reframe it slightly for us to think a little bit differently about what might be going on in this passage. And you might even be reading it and thinking, well, where's the Spirit in this? We'll get there. So starting in Matthew chapter 14, verse 22, it says, "Immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side, while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake." My translation says perfectly normal. That was a joke. Bad when you have to point out your own jokes. "When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified." And here's where I'd love for you to really pay attention, because they say, "It's a ghost! It's a ghost," they said. And they cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you. Tell me to come to you out on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink. He cried out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." Now let's paint the picture again. Let's kind of rethink what we just saw. We see Jesus, completely normal, walking out on the water. Again, that was a joke for you guys. Completely normal, walking out on the water, and the disciples see him in the distance. And to him, they look like a ghost. And If we know and understand anything about who Jesus is, we know that Jesus is a Trinitarian reality. That He is our Father, He is God, He is the Spirit. And so I love when they go, "It's a ghost," and He doesn't correct them. I love that little touch. It's just a subtle reality that Jesus, the Spirit, is calling. And the Spirit is in the distance, and it might be foggy and wavy. And try to picture with me what you would be thinking if you saw somebody out on the water walking. And you realize it's this person who you've been with. And Peter goes, "If it's really you, I want you to call me to come to you because this is a little strange. I need you to call me." And what does Jesus do? He says, "Come." And Peter and the other 11 disciples are probably looking at the situation going, "There's nothing logical whatsoever about this calling. There's nothing logical about what Jesus is asking of any of them to go step out on water." Logic in their brain probably began to kick in, but Peter, so compelled with what Jesus is asking him, takes a risky move. And maybe you've heard the story before from this perspective, that Peter steps out on the water, he begins to walk, and Peter loses his faith, and Jesus catches him. And then Jesus is talking to Peter and saying, "Peter, you had little faith. Why did you doubt me?" Except I would like you to think about the story from the perspective of Peter's the only disciple who got out of the boat. He was the only willing party in the first place who was willing to take the risk, even though it defied all the logic in his brain. He knew that Christ was calling, and he couldn't not respond. He was so deeply compelled by the Father, by the love of the Spirit, by Christ, that he got out of the boat and began to walk. And yes, he begins to doubt. He begins to stumble. He begins to fall. And Jesus catches him. And we think that this is only a message for Peter, a teaching moment that only Peter really is involved in, but the other 11 are probably in the boat watching this, learning from their master. And Jesus brings Peter back in the boat and he talks to him, but I don't believe he's just talking to Peter. I think he's talking to the other 11 as well. He's essentially saying, why didn't you get out of the boat? I have proven myself to you time and time again, and you still doubt that I have your back. The Spirit is calling each and every one of us to beautiful adventures in this world. But if we're honest and we examine our lives and we think inwardly about the choices that we've made in our relationship with Christ, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands because I'm pretty sure it's just all of us. How many of us have just stayed in the boat? How many of us have not braved the waters the way Peter did because we were too afraid? Or maybe we weren't paying attention. Maybe we had headphones in. Each and every one of us in our own ways have disobeyed the call of the Spirit. But we have a teaching moment here. This story is not just for the disciples, but it's for us here today. To truly consider our own lives and our own walks with Christ, to say, have I really taken a step out of the boat? Have I really taken any kind of leap? Have I really gone to the places that seem unstable that the Spirit is beckoning in this broken world that needs love? last weekend, many of you know, we took our student ministry to Forest Home for winter camp. We took about 20 students up with us, and there's a whole bunch of other churches that are there if you've never been there. And it was a wonderful time. Despite the fact that all day on Saturday, it poured rain constantly. There was one kid who brought no spare sweatshirt, and I think he was just walking around in, like, water. Like, he was just wearing a water outfit at one point that used to resemble a hoodie. And it was just, it was a great time, and I was amazed. And I'm always amazed when I go to student ministry events in general, that when they sense the Spirit moving, nothing holds them back. But they're just like you and I, because no one wants to be the first person to kind of take the step to follow the Spirit. And one of the things that happened last weekend that I thought was one of the coolest things I've ever seen at a camp like this, and I've been to lots of camps, and usually when they offer students a decision to follow the Holy Spirit's voice and make the decision to be in relationship with Jesus, there's two options. There's only two. I've only ever heard two at these camps. The first one is, who would like to make that decision for the first time? And the second one is, who would like to recommit their life? Now, when I walked in the room for our, they call it a decision night, because they kind of let kids know, like, we want you to know that there's going to be a decision to be made. And coming back to our passage, it's essentially like telling the students, you have to choose if you're going to get in the boat or not, or get out of the boat or not. And so they tell them, instead of two, there's four. There are four decisions. Because the Spirit, no matter where you're at in your life, is beckoning and calling and asking you to move deeper into relationship and to take a step. To take a step of faith wherever you're at in your life. And so they had the first corner of the room that kids could kind of walk around and do an experiential kind of way of saying, I'm committing to this. But before we got to that, there was a moment where we asked kids to stand up so they could identify themselves, which is a risky move. Especially in teenage world because of teenage things, right? So the first decision, they point to one corner and they say, this corner, and in my brain I'm thinking it's going to be first time decision. But they say, this is for people who want to make the decision to ask more questions, that they're not ready to actually commit their lives to Jesus. But you know what? They sense something going on and I wanna dig in. I want to ask more questions. So they had a space for that. In the next corner, they had a space for students who wanted to make the decision for the first time to commit to following Christ. Over here in the other corner, they had another option for recommitting, students who feel like, you know, I've committed, but you know, I fell away and I want to come back. I want to be in relationship with Christ. And then over here, they had a decision which, again, I had never heard this one mentioned at a camp like this before, that you have the option that maybe you're actually following Christ. But that doesn't mean we're done going deeper. And so they gave students the option, where is the Spirit essentially calling you to go deeper in your relationship with Christ? And if you want to commit to going deeper, this decision is for you. And so they have these options out here, and there's all kinds of different ways that you could do this, but they have the kids go, okay, we're going to raise our hands. Who's ready for this decision over here? That I'm not ready to commit, but I want to ask questions. And the exact thing that you think would happen did. No one raised their hand and everyone sat down. They just stayed silent because nobody wanted to go first. Nobody wanted to be the first person to put their foot out on the water. But the speaker didn't let it go. Because he knew that the Spirit was beckoning and doing things and moving and active and living. And so he let a little bit of time go. And sure enough, slowly but surely, I could see out of the corner of my eye a little hand from the audience kind of raising. And then after that, over here, over here, over here. And it was like dominoes. And then suddenly students aren't just raising their hand like this. They're just standing up going, "Me! I make the decision!" And it caught me, and it really connected when one of our students, who was sitting right next to me, the next thing I know, just a blur pops up, and she just cheers out, "I want to make that commitment." And I was amazed to see how one student's bravery to take the step unlocked it for everyone else. And then we moved on to the next one. Now, who would like to make a first-time commitment to Christ? Same thing. No one wants to raise their hand. No one wants to be the first person. Even though the tone had been set, people were still timid. They were worried about what people might think or what that might mean. But then again, slowly but surely, a hand raised. And what I watched from our group was three hands raised because of the bravery of some other student in another ministry. We had three students from our group say, I want to make that decision. But had this other student not paved the way and demonstrated what it might look like, who knows what may have happened? Maybe they would have kept that inside. And then we moved to the third space, which was my favorite one, because of what happened. And we were all sitting on the ground when this happened. They had no chairs. We were sitting what I call crisscross applesauce. And that was a joke. You can laugh at that too. And we were sitting there, and one of our students, middle school girl, goes, "Psh, Ryan, Ryan." So I kind of wobble on over, kind of on my bottom, just trying to get over to her. I'm like, "Yeah, what's going on?" And she says this to me. She says, "I really want to make a recommitment to Jesus. I know I need to, but I don't want to do it alone. Will you do it with me? Will you go first?" And in my brain, I'm like, I wasn't really going to recommit tonight, but I guess I am now. And I told her, "Absolutely. I will absolutely stand with you." And so they get to that question, and I'm the first person to stand up, and she comes right with me. And she stands so proud. Huge smile on her face because she knows that she followed the Spirit. But she needed someone to hold her hand. She needed someone to be with her, to show her that it's okay to walk out on the water even when we aren't so sure that it's going to hold us. The Spirit does not call us and let us drown. The Spirit calls us and says, "I will catch you when you fall." And Jesus demonstrated that reality for Peter, which also demonstrated the reality for everyone else. Had Peter not been willing to go out on the water, the other 11 may have never really understood that the Spirit, that God, that Jesus catches you when you fall. That He is not calling us to failure. He's called us and invited us into living deeper into relationship with Him, into His kingdom. For me in my life, the way that this plays out, very, very realistically, I'm only standing up here today in a church and also alive because of one individual in my life who stepped out of the boat. I know this is going to be a really hard thing for some of you to swallow, but I was never really a cool kid. That wasn't a joke. I was never the cool kid. My group of friends were, I always hung out with anyone and everyone. Like, I didn't really know where I fit in. I was never a sports person, which I'll talk about that every time I'm up here probably. And so all my youth leaders, all the people who were involved in church ministry, like, I liked them. We had like a good relationship, but there was never a person who made me feel like I was okay. Like I was good enough, like I mattered. No one ever kind of got down to my level and like said, "Come on, like we're good." And my whole life I kind of felt out of place, which was kind of a weird reality for existing in church world. Because I grew up in church. And church to me, my whole life, I was told I fit in, I belong, I matter, but never really felt that. And I would go to this summer camp called Wolf Mountain. And it was not connected with our church. My parents just found it, and they had horseback riding, all kinds of cool stuff. And one year I decided I was ready to do this new camp that they were offering called Impact Crew. And again, I'd been to Wolf Mountain many times, and usually I go and my counselor was some jock guy who I immediately thought, we're not going to talk about anything. And usually we didn't, because I showed up and I was the nerdiest of the nerds. And back in that day, being a nerd was not cool like it might be today, so I had that disadvantage on me as well. But I remember going to Wolf Mountain this one year. I signed up for Impact Crew, and Impact Crew was a leadership development camp. It was a part of their camp that they had a couple cabins where you could sign up if you were a little bit older. You could pay money, and you could go work. It's a brilliant, brilliant idea for camps. So I paid money, and I would go, and you got to work in the kitchen, you got to do grounds work, you got to do all kinds of fun stuff that was actually legitimately a great time. But you got to stay for 2 weeks instead of just 5 days, so you kind of have that longer amount of time. So the first summer, I'm signed up to do Impact Crew. I remember I'm getting my stuff, and I'm going to my cabin, and I'm just thinking, I wonder what this counselor is going to be like. And I walk in the door, and I'm wearing probably some comic book shirt or something like that that wasn't very cool. And usually when I walk in, the counselor's got his sports team memorabilia everywhere, and I'm just like, oh, okay, that's fine. But I walk in this time, and there's this big, tall counselor whose name is Jamal. And Jamal goes, hey, what's your name? And I'm like, I'm Ryan. He's like, I love your shirt. And I look around, and he's got Superman posters. He's got I think he was wearing a Superman shirt. Like, he was almost entirely nothing like I would have ever anticipated. And was still a little bit hesitant. But I remember that moment, like, he's like, oh, I love your shirt. And he goes, and he's like, welcome. And he gives me a huge hug. Which had never happened before. Like, no one had ever, like, shown me that level of care. And as a teenager, like, that meant something to me. Something really deep. And so I kind of, like, was taken aback, and I didn't know what to think. And the more that I shared my life with Jamal, the more he started showing up. Telling him all the times I never fit in. That I was always kind of the oddball out, and he never let me be the oddball out. Anytime I looked alone, he welcomed me over. Not only that, but he demonstrated to me what faithfully following Jesus actually looked like. Something that, because I had never gotten a relationship like that, I had never really seen that. And for me, in my life, Jamal was somebody who anywhere and everywhere he went, I saw him getting out of the boat because he believed that God was calling him to love everyone. Anywhere and everywhere. He loved people so much, he would just get comfortable and he would make himself at home. He, I think, is a part of our family. He's in our family pictures. Like, he would come to dinner. I was talking to my dad yesterday about Jamal, and he said, yeah, Jamal used to just grab food off my plate without asking. And like, yeah, that's Jamal. Like, he believes that we're connected, that we're one. And so he would go anywhere and everywhere to help people know that reality, that they matter, that they belong. So for him and his life, that's what the Spirit was always asking him, to go and to love as well as he could love. And he did. He showed up to everything that no one else would for me. Plays. Attempted sports team games. broken relationships. I don't even know where Jamal lived. I think I assumed he lived at the camp. I know he told me at some point where he lived, but he would always tell me, oh, I just came from this place. And I'm like, that's like two states away. He's like, yeah, but you needed me. Where are you? Where do you live? That was the kind of person Jamal always was, anywhere and everywhere. And I got to see that. I saw tangibly demonstrated in front of me what getting out of the boat looks like on a daily basis. About a month ago, I got a text from my mom, said, hey, something happened. Jamal has some kind of heart issue. And just so you know, he's got to have surgery. So he had to have open heart surgery, and a couple weeks ago, he had this procedure done. And he never woke up. Jamal went on the water everywhere. He got out of the boat. And I thought to myself, people have to know. I got to do something. I have to tell somebody because this man demonstrated everything for me. He changed my life. He saved my life. And so in the midst of all of this, I caught wind that somebody had started a Facebook group that we could post memories, kind of like a Facebook scrapbook, if you will, of the memories we could share about Jamal. And I had no idea who was going to be invited into that group. From my perspective, Jamal treated me like I was the only person in the world. So I didn't know what to anticipate. And I get on the Facebook page, and it's just wall after wall after wall of story after story after story of how Jamal, for different people in different parts of the world who look different, who everything, he demonstrated the same thing to them as he did to me. Countless people sharing stories about this man who say, I am following Jesus because of him. Because he demonstrated to me, first and foremost, here's what it looks like. It means going into the wild, into the unknown, into places that seem shaky, but knowing that God's got you, that he has not abandoned you. But we have been called and beckoned by the Spirit to go into places that make us wildly uncomfortable. My friend Jamal deeply, deeply inspires me. Even after his death. And he got me thinking about what it would look like if each of us lived in that way. Not that we do the same things Jamal does, because the Spirit calls you and he calls me differently because we are in relationship with this God. For Jamal, it was the Spirit calling him to love anyone and everyone. For you, perhaps it means volunteering at the youth ministry. Perhaps it means having that conversation that you so badly don't want to have. It could be anywhere and everywhere, but the Spirit is alive and active and working and wooing you and beckoning you to listen, to take the headphones out and be aware and to not be afraid of what water or land or whatever we're walking out on, but knowing that God is calling and He has you. We ask people all the time to make monumental decisions for following Christ. We talk about sacrifice. And in many ways, this is a sacrifice. It means getting out of the boat, which is where we're comfortable, where we feel safe, and stepping out onto murky water. And if we are asking other people, if we as Christians are asking other people to make these kinds of leaps and steps, if we are not demonstrating it to them first, why would they? Just like these students who are waiting for someone else, other people are waiting to see how you are responding to the Spirit's call in your life. In a moment, we're going to partake of the table of communion together. And when I think about communion, I think about the word covenant. That there's this promise, there's this exchange going on that we come to this table, and it doesn't matter who you are or where you're from, everyone is invited to come and be a part of this, but we're entering into a covenant with the divine. That we're entering into a covenant that says, I want what you're telling me. I want that adventure. I want to go in the direction that I know you're calling me to go. And we partake of the grace, but we also say, yes, but I'm committing to actually following you. And so this morning, as we partake of communion together, I encourage you to think about it from that perspective. That this table is an answer to the call, day in and day out, of the Spirit in your life. Saying, will you follow me? Will you enter into this relationship? Will you trust that I have got you and I'm not going to let you go? And if we are willing to be people who faithfully follow the Spirit in our life, just like my friend Jamal, how might God use you to impact this world? How might God use you to make a profound difference in our world today?